This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the Livestock Show. Another week with no rain, so some farmers continuing to feed heavy to give grass a chance to grow. Shout out to our supporters, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us to make this show happen. Let's hear from our specialists around the country as normal. I have quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, two quick fires in for you. Read them out here. I'm short a few heifers for BDGP. Genotypes are gone in. Could I chance it or should I purchase a few heifers? Talk to me about what that question means, first of all, Adam, and then maybe a bit of an answer.
Yeah, you'd always be weary of chancing it, Jack, but in anything. But anyway, I suppose 50% of your reference number of animals in BDGP have to be 4 or 5 star. 50% of the females are cows in your herd has to be 4 or 5 star on the 21st of October. That's the same target as every other year. Nothing has changed this year. The only thing is that if you had samples submitted by the 29th of June, so your DNA samples within by the 29th of June, the next run or the next evaluation run is on the 4th of October, which will mean that you'll have the results before the 21st of October, so you'll know where you stand, and that gives you 3 weeks, as it was then, to purchase or not. Okay. But if your sample didn't go in until just last week, that run isn't going to take place until the 22nd of November, and that's running at 2 to, that's past the deadline of the 21st of October. Now, in the past, ICBF have showed some leniency and showed that they'll count them heifers or cows that come up on the 22nd of November. But look, at it's dodgy, Jack. You want to be very sure they're going to come up on the 20. If they don't, you still can't purchase heifers then after the 22nd of November. So I'd say, look, at it, sit down, go to your Herd Plus account, see exactly where you are, and look at purchase a heifer or two if you really have to.
Okay, another one for you, Adam. Ask Adam, would he buy nitrogen now or would he hold and wait?
Yeah, sure. Look, a lot of talk, a lot of calls, Jack, this week as well on that. Look, cash, I suppose, look, it's not that plentiful on dry stock farms, but definitely anybody that maybe has it and has it to spend, I'd be saying it's probably a good investment. It's I don't think it's going to come back. Definitely maybe a pallet or two for silage crop or something like that. I wouldn't go mad, but look, I'd be happier maybe with a pallet or two in the shed, I think, going into the back end, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Adam. I might ask Aidan that question as well on the fertilizer. Darren, two quick fires here for you. Hi, Darren. I'm an organic farmer and looking through the spec for acres, I see very little in it for me. Would you agree?
Yeah, Jack, I wouldn't, because it depends on the circumstances. So he doesn't give us any information about the size of organic farmer. So I just put a caveat in. If he's a small, say, size farm, if you 30 hectares, for example, well, then there isn't going to be a lot in it for him. And why I say that is that his organic payment per hectare is at a high payment, and for a lot of measures and acres to get paid on them, you have to forego your organic payment. So if he's up at a couple of hundred euros, say, or even between 200 and 300 euros per hectare on organics, he's not going to forego that to get a payment of 200 euros on the extensive grazing. Whereas if he was up at 70 hectares and he's down to a low payment of, I think it's 60 euros a hectare or something, well, then he has opportunities there. So they say the big money items in acres, you have to forego the organics payment. Now, if he did want to do other stuff like coppice hedgerows, lay hedgerows, plant trees, well, then that's a different story. But no, he probably is right in feeling aggrieved that way.
Darren, the other quick one that came in for you was a farmer. I dipped yaws 6 weeks ago, and this week I have a yaw with maggots. Why is this happening, and have I any recourse on the product? So obviously, Darren, this farmer thinks the product is at fault here. Dipped 6 weeks ago, yaw with maggots this week. Talk to me.
Yeah, unfortunately not, Jack. It's something we probably get a couple of queries on, usually this time of the year. Now, the amount of farmers that would be, say, summer dipping has reduced because of this reason in recent years. So the products or the SPCs, say, the product labels will state that you'll get control for blow five for 5 to 8 weeks. And in a scenario where you've maybe had a lot of hot weather, or maybe you've maybe real high conditions or real high risk where sort of muggy weather like we've had in the last week, you can always get cases in sort of 6 weeks onwards. So unfortunately not, Jack, no. Like, it's not that the product hasn't worked. That's what the product says. And most fellas would use it this time of the year to get you out to the end of the season and use a pour on early in the year.
Okay. Thanks for that, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, I might just throw that quick fire at you again that I threw to Adam in terms of that farmer that was looking to buy fertilizer. He asked for advice and buy fertilizer now or hold and wait, buy nitrogen now or hold and wait.
I'd definitely be in for buying it now, Jack. There are farmers, a lot of dairy farmers do deals of fertilizer currently. They're buying, you know, 40 to 50 or 60% even of their annual requirements for next year now. A lot of that is bought on the promise of delivery next October, November. A lot of the new urea isn't actually made yet. But they're also buying P's and K's now, which are available. But some 0730, 0720 has been very scarce. P and K is scarce, hard to get. And new urea isn't yet available, but I would definitely be more inclined to buy now than wait.
Okay, thanks, Aidan. Second quick fire for you, and it's one we might get into a bit more detail. I saw Aidan in the crowd at Johnstone Castle open day. Ask him what he thought of the day. So,
ah, sure. Look, it was a great day, Jack, to be fair. Like, I actually really enjoyed it. There was big crowds there. Only three or four larger boards at the start when everyone had to, you know, sit and or stand and watch. But for the rest of the day, then you could go around to, like, I'd say there must have been 50 or 60 different small boards. You could pick and choose what you wanted to get. I thought the format worked well. The demos were good. The mood was fairly positive. And there was a lot of faces there I never saw before.
Okay, I'll come back to you on that one. Sorry, there's actually one other quick fire for you. Is it too late to sow rape or kale? Here we are at the end of August.
Well, I suppose it's not too late, Jack. You can sow it, but you won't have much of a yield. So really, the rape kale job, it's really, it's a July sowing date, really, to get high yields, you know, to get 6-7 ton per hectare of a hybrid rape. You want to be sowing it in July. You get very little now. You're better off keeping the grass there. Let the grass grow on. You'll actually have more yield. So no, I wouldn't be sowing it now.
Nice one. Thanks, Aidan. Chat to you in a minute. Adam, just turning back to you. I was talking to my buddy in Leitrim yesterday, absolutely delighted with the year that has been in terms of the weather-wise. He was picking stones on a reseed. Talk to me. What's the weather? How's it performing for you up around Cavan Monaghan?
Yeah, I don't want to seem gone or look at his textbook stuff, Jack. It's unbelievable. Load of fodder made. Grass is driving on. Look, we don't often get years off. And then you talk to me at the end of August, and we'd be looking at housing, you know, before too long. So, look, it's great to get that. I think it's going to really help ground up with us as well. You see ground cracking up and in place. You know, that's going to help drainage long term, I think, on that ground. And look at it, yeah, it's there's nothing to complain. But then moving down the road, Jack, to Tullamore and moving on to John Halley's, like it's a completely different story. I was down there this week, and you know, it's like the Serengeti down there. You know, it's just it's brown.
Yeah, you might be fit to send down a few bales down the country, Adam. I mean, talk to us a bit more about Tullamore, kind of, and kind of how he's holding them up, or how he's managed. How's Sean doing?
Yeah, sure. Look, we're deciding there. We decided not to go with fertilizer, Jack, this week, based on, I suppose, heavy rain coming at the weekend. We're nearly better let that rain come and then go with the fertilizer next week. But we're badly in need of a shot on and grass there. Like, cover has dropped, you know, it's around that 300 mark. You know, we're slowing up cows with bales of hay there on paddocks. Sheep are weaned off, so they're not too bad. You know, they're coping not too bad. You'll see on the video there now in terms of where they are just beside the yard, like it's fairly yellow. But in terms of stock, and all stock, I suppose, are fairly settled. There's a group of in-calf heifers there. They're on tight grazing as well, but they're happy. Stock are settled. And I suppose he's creeping the calves, and the calves are going out into the next paddock and trying to hold up them cows with hay. But really, rain is badly needed there. And look, it's not going to see us out, I suppose. It'll take another week or 10 days once that rain comes to kick on from that. But and then the concern is, I suppose, then what's going to come? You know, if you look at rainfall figures, we're down at half the rainfall for the year. So does that mean that there's another half but now due to come in the next couple of months, you know?
So Adam, knowing that, like, right, okay, and here we are, as you say, the end of August, and you have, you know, 80 or 90 cows walking around the place there now that are in right good condition. Like, is there anything to be kind of said for kind of maybe weaning them off or locking them up into a smaller area or locking them up inside even or whatever, you know, just doing something kind of, I call it, fairly drastic like that, kind of an early wean job to kind of really reduce your demand? Like, I mean, you take 80 or 90 cows out of it, like, I know you're feeding, you still have to feed them, like, you know what I mean, but you might be able to preserve the grass that comes, hopefully.
I suppose you could work them cows a bit harder, Jack. The only thing is with cows, you know, in terms of if ground does get wet, we'd be under pressure to house them, because cows, them heavy cows, are hard kept up, you know. Definitely you keep your weanlings out. And then they're in on an expensive feed on silage. You might talk about restricting them, but they're still going to need silage and they're going to need straw. Both are coming in expensive this year on that farm. So, yeah, but look, at all our options will be there. I'd expect we'll get a flush now of grass. You'll have a bit of nitrogen maybe mineralised out of the soil in terms of when that rain comes at the weekend, and we get a bit of a flush, I'd say, on in the next week or 10 days, which should help build covers coming on in. But look, it's going to be a tight time for grass, because he needs the grass for them white things as well, in terms of coming up to breeding for them, you know.
White things is right. I mean, but you're close enough in Tullamore now. I hear you if you were in Cavan Monaghan, but you're close enough to a source of straw, like we'll say, in Tullamore. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe is it gone? Is it chopped?
No.
Is it whatever?
No,
you know?
I mean, there's with straw coming in there between 18 and 20 euros a bale. I think the winter, we've got some winter stuff in at 18, and the other stuff's coming in at 18 or 19. I suppose to get up the country then is another story at 6 or 7 to get it back up the country. Yeah. But we have them. We've got the straw with a shed full of straw, but it's still, it's not cheap, you know, at that money.
Yeah. Okay, I hear you. We might come back to it again next week. To talk to me further down the road, obviously, then we had that open day recently in John Halley's, you know, on the dairy beef job. I mean, again, I think we talked last week, had he locked up heifers and he was going feeding them indoors?
Yeah, so that's what we've done. The 60 heifers went in, and I'd say the 60 bullocks, unless we get rain at the weekend and the thing turns around very, very quickly, I'd say we'll be putting in bullocks next week or the end of next week. Heifers came in good, all very settled and doing well. And look, it's just going to add to the cost of them, Jack, down there. You know, like it's they're eating silage now, they're up on meal. But I'd say Declan will start to draft them heifers the end of next week. I'd say we'll have actually, by the time we do next week's Tech Talks, I'd say we'll have some results of heifers as killed or some heifers there. It'll be small numbers, it always is to start off with, but we'll have a regular draft then from then on. But look, it's under big pressure down there as well. No rain, grass cover very low. And that's why them beef cattle are going in.
Adam, this whole job of the weather and kind of where it's at, is it having any impact on the beef or the mark trade? Maybe take the beef trade first and then we come to the mark.
Yeah, no, beef trade is fairly steady, Jack, and cows are probably the highlight of the trade. You know, there's massive demand there for cows. And bullocks probably 480, 85 at a push, heifers 85, 90 at a push. So not much change there for the last sort of 3 weeks. Kill went up 1,200 head. We're up to 35,000. Bullock kill went up a bit. Everything else is stable. The bullocks went up 1,200 head. In terms of beef trade, yeah, and cows are very, very steady as well. A little bit of pressure in the north, but not huge. No big change anywhere. It was the mark trade's a different story, Jack. And looking at the mark bids analysis this week, especially in the southern half of the country and the southeast, a little bit of pressure on there. I'd say grass supplies are about starting to bite down there. Speaking to a few mark managers, saying some lads are just easing off a wee bit in terms of buying, just don't have the grass. And those winter finishers haven't started to come out yet. They're a little bit concerned about feed prices and that. So just a little bit of flux there in that this week in terms of that those prices. And we've seen weanlings take a wee bit of a hit as well this week. Those weanling numbers are small, and until we get big numbers, there's a big sale in Carrigallen there at the weekend, 300 bulls out for it. So it'll be a good gauge as to how it goes compared to last year's sale. But I'd say Mark Trade under a little bit of pressure this week.
You have a page on the sustainability job this week in terms of greenhouse gases and trying to reduce beef greenhouse gases. Talk to me.
Yeah, so this is the Signpost Pro, the Chagas Signpost Programme. There's 117 demo farms throughout the country, all across different enterprises, tillage, pigs, dairy, beef, sheep. And I suppose those farms are going to act as leaders over the next couple of years and work with the Chagas advisors on the Signpost Programme to enact some of the technologies on those farms to show how we can reduce emissions on those farms. And look, we went through it on the beef page this week, on the sustainability page, looking at all those different areas. And look, it's positive because nearly every technology that you have there, it's also going to increase profitability. And that's important to remember. It's not a matter of reducing emissions through reducing profit maybe on the farm. There's a lot of that. It's good technical efficiency, a lot of that stuff. And you can look at they're all outlined there on the sustainability page this week.
Adam, I leave you on this. You have a big weekend coming up in terms of that stock person competition in up in County Meath. Give me a flavor.
This is the second year FBD, the Irish Farmers Journal and the Irish Shows Association have come together again. The finals are being held in Trim. Look, this is a massive day for young people. We've 30 young people involved, 10 juniors under 12 years of age. We've 10 intermediates between 12 and 18, and we've 10 seniors between 18 and 25. So they're going to be put through their paces. They'll kick off. It's an all-day job. It'll kick off at 10:30 in Trim Show on Sunday morning. So they're going to be interviewed. They'll be, judged on their ability to show themselves, show the animal, present themselves, and general knowledge then in agriculture, and also a stock judging element of that as well. So that's going to take place all day Sunday with presentation of prizes around 3:00 on Sunday afternoon. So look, at hopefully the weather will be with us and it'll be a really good day. I know it's in pedigree this week in terms of all those people that are taking part, and they're all very, very excited about it.
Nice one, Adam. Best of luck to all the Tipperary young persons taking place in that. Talk to you next week. Darren, I put it to Adam there about doing something drastic in terms of Tullamore Farm and maybe trying to maybe drying off cows, etc. Obviously, the ewes are dried off, the lambs are weaned, we'll say, in Tullamore Farm. Like, I mean, is there anything else you're doing down there to again reduce the demand? And are you selling lambs maybe at a lighter weight or anything?
No, Jack, what he's done is probably he introduced feed there about 2 or 3 weeks ago to the ram lambs, segregated them out, and that has delivered real benefits. Now, not a huge amount of feed, about a bag between, 120. It's coming in roughly at about 0.28 to 0.3 of a kilo per head, and he drafted off 48 ram lambs. And I think he'd another 40-something ewe lambs this week. So that'll have a huge impact. We haven't got the returns on those yet, but we'll discuss them next week. Lamb, he drafted ram lambs at a bit higher weight.
What's higher, Darren? 45, 46?
Yeah, 45 to 48. And there was some of them up to 50 kilos. There were some, say, horn lambs that I killed poorly. The best way to can describe them, do you know the cross, say, off the mule jack that might have, text lamb bring you a bit of horns or stumps of horns and say maybe loose on the wool. So he let them up to try and hit the carcass weight. Now, not totally by design in that we were waiting for the withdrawal period as well. We did treat them there. The worm count had spiked after the last, significant rainfall. It was short-lived, but it was the last bit of significant rainfall. And I'd expect that it's something we'd have to watch out for again if we get a big fall or rain next week. But with them 80 lambs gone, it'll take the pressure off. And I'd say, Jack, probably what we'll do is if we don't get, say, a response to grass growth next week, is the heavier ram lambs, we'll probably segregate them out even further and start up the meal to 0.5 or 0.7 of a kilo on those, because we're getting close to breeding time and we just need grass, as Adam said.
Yeah, and Darren, speaking of that, I mean, in terms of breeding, and there's probably others that are, I'll say, that are in a worse situation than Tullamore Farm in terms of grass supply, like I'll say further east potentially now. You know, I mean, is there anything in terms of that breeding piece? Like, I mean, if you were really tight now, and as Adam says, it's looking like the Serengeti, like, I mean, is there a case for delay in breeding, or is that too drastic a change, you know, for a kind of a weather piece that we get rain maybe this weekend, you know, for a lot of places?
Yeah, I suppose, Jack, it all depends on the system. See, like, that's what I was even writing the management notes this week, is that people should be asking themselves, have they got the right lamb and date? We'll talk about that in a second. But going back to your first question, like, I was talking to a farmer this week. He's feeding a pound and a half of meal and feeding hay and coming in along and feeding, say, some silage. Now, he said he has some top quality silage. The biggest issue is the silage is going off very quick in the field and the ewes are not inclined to eat it as quick. So he said he'd probably stick on the hay side of things and maybe up to meal if he has to. He's about 3 weeks out from breeding, but he's in the same situation as a lot of farmers. He said if he gets rain in the morning, that he still have to continue to feed for another 10 days to give ground a chance to come and to try and get ahead of himself. He did look at maybe pushing back the laminate, and he's still not sold on whether it's the right thing for him to do. He said it affects other things on the farm. He said he might just go ahead and look at, if he does take a hit in litter size, that's, he said it might be, as long as it's not too significant, it might work for him next year, and that it might get lambs thriving quicker and bring his should take the pressure off next spring. There's other people that are looking at it that yours haven't recovered as good as what they thought, and that they're maybe going to delay or split the breeding and that let off a group of yours, just say at the end of the month, at the end of September. And what they're looking at the moment is giving the 10 or yours one cycle to come in. It won't prolong the drafting period massively, or sorry, the lambing period massively. Oh, look, it will have an impact. But they're just afraid that if they keep going as is, that it will hit the litter size too much. So it's a difficult position, Jack. Like.
And so, Darren, like, I mean, in terms of the breeding piece, we're still that breeding in 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Like, it's early lambing flocks. Like, I mean, the majority of guys are still main crop. We call it main breeding season. Are they all weaned off now at this stage? Like, have they all tightened up yours at this stage and are kind of just providing decent grass for lambs? Like, is that kind of where they are?
Yeah. So if you were to look at it, say your March lambing flock, they're all weaned off. The last year April lambing flock is probably weaned off, I'd say, this week, or should be weaned off this week, in that some fellas have pushed out lambing dates. So them yours aren't really, there isn't as much pressure on those. They are not really under threat. A good few of them are probably more extensive systems anyway, just by their nature. Yeah. So it's your, like, if we take Tullamore Farm, we'll be aiming for the 10th of March, sort of lambing, so around the 16th, 17th of October, he'll be letting out the ram. So he has that 5 to 6 weeks period there at the moment. He hasn't came in with hay yet. Possibly might come in with a bit this week just to keep yours content more than anything else. Yours, luckily, were in good condition, but you don't want to, particularly if grass is going to be tight, like, you don't want to exploit feed reserves now if it's going to be hard to build again. But it's probably on a knife edge there, and that he need to do something in the next week. And I'd say he'd probably introduce a bit of hay. And a lot of farmers look at it probably in the same position, Jack. I'd say that some are probably looking and saying, actually, the ewes will be grand till 4, 5, 6 weeks. I'd be saying even bring out a bale of hay. They will eat it. Yeah. Now, maybe if it turns wet next week, they mightn't, when the peak of grass starts coming. But I'd be taking the sort of opinion that not to leave them with nothing at all, like,
get in early, like, yeah. But there must be a real test of good fencing now this weather, like. Darren, in terms of, you mentioned hay, like, and I suppose fodder prices in general, like, in terms of silage, like, again, I see you've done a nice piece there in the journal this week in terms of kind of a wrap around in terms of where prices are. What are you kind of hearing?
So, like, it's really, you flipped the country on its head this year, like. You'd be talking to myself and Adam about fodder prices this time last year, and those fellas looking for the big concerns. It's funny, I look back on notes of the night, and the big concerns were having enough forage and getting slurry out. That was the big concern sort of this time last year. And none of those are concerns at the moment. Like the, I suppose the weather hit at times when it was needed in the West, particularly after Hay Meadows, the prohibited, excuse me, the first week of July, prohibited date passed. There was hay got every, and most of them Hay Meadows. There was a great chance then again to get more reserves. And so like feed reserves have been good. We've got the rain when we need, and prices are anywhere from 25 to 30 euros for a bale of hay. Silage, same thing, Jack, 25 to 32 sort of thing. There's even keener deals I've heard in the last week if you take volumes and also if you pay for it up front. Whereas in contrast, and I chatted to Dave and talked to Pat O'Toole, Siobhan, everyone look at on the prices. And like if you're looking down on Wexford at the moment, there isn't much hay on the market, but anything that is 35 to 40 euros a bale, same going across your own country, and no real difference for silage. Now, there is prices being sought of 45 and 50 euros, and maybe Aidan will talk about it. I think up to now, Jack, there hasn't anyone really biting at that because it's been more lucrative to feed, say, Pam Kernel, Soy Hulls, if you could get them. Say some, it's been more lucrative at that price to feed concentrates so far. Whether or not they will hit that price, I don't know. Contrast that, and you would think that there would be good demand for straw in the east and southeast, and the demand for straw is very sluggish. Bale selling for 12 to 14 euros off the field in Wexford and Carlow. If you go up to Siobhan's country in Leash, she said they're looking for 15 euros a bale, not getting it. Some people deciding to put bales in the shed, as Adam said, go over around Tullamore, 16, 18 euros, maybe 20 euros delivered. And like there's bales coming over now, west 23, 24 euros a bale because they have been able to be bought at that 12, 13 euros. It hasn't been the 28 or 30 euros that was feared at the beginning. So like it's what I'd say, it's probably an unknown situation that we've been in. And like, if you don't get rain in the next week, or if rain falls in a deluge and runs off and we're back to dry again, I would say that sort of trade will probably ramp up. And you could see a few sellers said to me this week that there's been inquiries about backloads, which is hard to believe. Like backloads of hay coming from the west down to the east, yep, say going down with straw. And the other one is that there seems to be a huge amount of inquiries for maize silage and fodder beet. Now, no certain prices. I talked, it's hard to get a sort of run on it, but some fellas I talked to had maize sort of, they were pitting it at somewhere that it could be around 80 to 100 euros plus a ton. Fodder beet, 60 to 70 euros, depending on whether it's delivered locally, washed or that type of thing. But that the interest levels in it are phenomenal. But it'll be another couple of weeks before we gauge what the actual trade will be for that.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, and maize obviously is still soaking up the sun in most places. Darren, I put the same question to Adam in terms of the impact of this kind of weather related impact on the trade. I mean, what are we seeing in terms of March trade, maybe first of all, in terms of kind of the lamb trade?
Yeah, huge rush of lambs onto the market in the last week. Now, we would have been expecting peak sort of throughput at this time of the year, but what you have is you have more store lambs coming on, and you have also lambs that probably should be going direct to be hanging up. A lot of lambs maybe at the weight, 45, 46 kilos, but no flesh in them. Would be a grand lamb to buy, finish in 3 weeks' time, if you had a bit of confidence in what's happening in the trade at the moment. And that's what's really lacking, is that lamb prices are back 20 cent a kilo. Market's very sticky. Back to this quotes this time last year, 6 euros a kilo, which a 21 kilo carcass coming in 106 euros. There is a bit more weight going. If you look, there isn't any lambs trading either at 6 euros, Jack, at 620, 630, but your ballpark sort of 110, 115. There is lambs maybe up to selling up to 125, 130 for real good quality lambs because they're tight in the market. But if you take all of them factors combined, it is having an impact on the store lamb trade. But all those factors considered, map managers in the West would say that the store lambs are still trickling along, that there's buyers there for them. Prices anywhere from sort of 240 to 280 a kilo, depending on the type of lamb. And producers are relatively happy to keep doing that. Now, you mentioned on the only impact, Jack, that I could see having on long term as well is that the trade for hoggets at the moment is poor. That if we're looking at, say, hoggets prices at the minute for playing quality hoggets, there's lots of them at 150 to 170. There is just that buyer that would have taken a chance this time last year isn't. And also, I think that it might push some fellas to push the lamb and date back next spring, and you could see long-term implications on lamb supplies early next year. But then one farmer said to me, if concentrates are going to be at 450 euros, there won't be lambs finished as efficiently January, February, March, and you could have more lambs hanging around later until grass comes next spring. So it's hard just to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You could see a kind of a significant change. Darren, I'll leave you on this one. The acre scheme, we talked about it at length for the last couple of podcasts, I suppose, in fairness. Is it fair to say, Darren, that there's been more kind of, I call it, there's still a lot, we're learning still a lot about the scheme and what happens and farmers are getting their heads around it and how it suits their farm and all that. Like, so qualifying all that. But is it fair to say there's still more negative than positive about the acre scheme and like the costs are higher, et cetera, and that kind of?
Yeah, definitely regionally, Jack. And I think that it's still unknown. Like, but there is looking a lot of negativity. And sometimes in farming, you will get a lot of sort of the bad news travels a bit quicker. Like some farmers have rang me and they said, Ginny, you know, I'm sort of happy enough on that. But definitely there is more sort of concerns around, like even one thing what a couple of farmers have rang me on is this, say the results-based measures, that they have to get their advisor out in year three and year five again to score. Now, in Glass, you are paying an annual, say, subscription, but if you have to get an advisor out, and rightly so, if there's more work to be done, well, then you have more money leaking from the payment to the farmer into the administration and advisory side of things as well. So, look, there is definitely a lot of niggling bits on that way. I would hope, Jack, that we start, say, to see more concrete sort of information around the cooperation side of things in the next week, and also that we can get a bit of feedback from planners that they're getting up and running and getting plans in. Like, the early indications would be that as you say, there probably is more negatives than positives coming back.
Okay. Listen, we'll chat again on it next week, I think, when things are beginning to settle down in that whole space around acres and what's happening. And I'd say there's a lot of advisors out there have enough work to do anyway without needing even more work and more administration and more farm visits, we'll say, looking at various bits and pieces. But anyway, listen, we'll chat to that again next week, Darren. Thanks for that. Aidan, you were obviously seeing Eaton ice cream down in the sunshine in Johnstown during the week. Good day.
It was, Jack. Yeah, it was good, in fairness. Loads of information there. Probably an information overload, if anything else. Like, there was, as I said at the start of the show, there was must have been 50 or 60 different boards up, maybe even more, you know. And look, you couldn't get to them all. Like, so I was kind of glancing through my top photographs, and I'll come back and I'm looking at the booklet there as well, and the evenings and whatever else. So, look, there's loads to digest. I suppose I've particular interest to me was looking at these technologies that are including this, you know, this MAC curve, the marginal abatement cost curve that Chagas go on about and we all talk about as a way of achieving this 25% reduction. Look, a lot of the, you know, there was no silver bullet there, you know, to be fair. There are one thing that caught my eye was the soil organic carbon levels in the different agricultural catchments. You know, so there's six or seven different catchments that Chagas are looking at in terms of the catchments program, and they're measuring these farms every few years. Every field and every farm within that catchment is being measured every few years for organic carbon levels and P and K levels. And what interests me, the Timoleague catchment down in Cork, which is an intensive dairy region, is increasing in soil organic carbon levels at a much faster rate than any other of the catchments. Now, they're putting that down to the amount of manure that's in the system. But it's interesting at the same time, you know, and obviously there's emissions with dairy and all the rest, we're not denying that or anything like that. But it's very interesting to see that a dairy catchment is actually, those soils are sequestering more carbon. Because soil organic carbon is a measure of carbon levels. There's a direct correlation there. So, I mean, if we had better information on that and in time and in years to come, perhaps we could say, okay, dairy farming is emitting X, but it's also sequestering Y, and maybe it's going to give us a little bit of breathing space down the line, you know, if policy allows that kind of stuff. Because we have to look at the sequestration as well within farming. And at the moment, there's no account given for that. And as well, Jack, you could say that if you're then sequestering more carbon because you're doing, you know, X, Y, Z on your farm that's capturing more carbon, you should be allowed to get credit for that, or payment, or to sell it, or whatever you want to do with it, in time. If we get on top of the whole emissions thing, unless you take account of sequestration, we're at nothing, I think.
And I suppose in that kind of, you know, to bring all that together is kind of that policy vacuum that's there in terms of, you know, coordinate that whole environmental piece. As you say, carbon is only one part of it, but nitrate leaching, water quality, you know, there's numerous different strands to that piece. And Tim O'League might be right good in terms of, as you say, that carbon and organic matter piece, but it might be very vulnerable in terms of nitrate leaching as well. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in some regards, Jack, like the water quality, the nitrate leach one is arguably a bigger issue really than the climate change one. When you look at it, like, you know, farming has a direct negative relationship with water quality because of the fact that farms are, you know, bouncing rivers, lakes, you know, all we do on farms ends up down in aquifers, and they end up then filling streams and rivers. So, like, for me, I'm much more concerned about water quality as being a longer-term threat than the emissions. There's always going to be emissions associated with food production. If we want to live, we're going to have, you know, that's a fact of life, like. And I think policymakers kind of understand that. There's a lot of noise around agriculture and farming and all the rest, but I think, you know, in real terms, we're going to have to accept that there always will be some sort of an emissions factor with food production, but we'll also have removals obviously as well. But water quality is a huge one, Jack, but there are ways around it. I went away very confident that looking at and I think looking at what's happening on farms and the amount of farmers that were here in attendance the other day, you know, which is not an easy place. Johnson Castle is not an easy place to get to. There was a few thousand farmers there, which was great to see. But like, go back to the water quality one, there are steps we can take in terms of clover. We're only now regulating fertilizer use in Ireland. So I think we're probably 20 years too late in that. And that wasn't a very popular thing to say 5 or 6 years ago. But I think, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a farmer now who isn't welcoming the fact that fertilizer use is going to be regulated, which is going to have an impact in terms of, you know, it's going to the lads that are spreading more than they should be are now going to be curtailed. So that's one aspect of it. More water, soil water management, more slurry storage. They're all going to have a feed into it. But like what we've spoken about in the show before, what's concerning me is that if dairy farmers are going to be limited in terms of how many cows they can carry, you know, a productive level of stocking rate. I'm not saying that they should, you know, it needs to be unrestricted. It's not restricted at the moment. The 250 kilogram N limit in the nitrate surrogation is a high target. You know, most dairy farmers are not next or near stocked at that, as high as that. But if there's a risk of the derogation going to 220 or even worse again to 170, you know, productive and viable and very, very sustainable dairy farms are going to be badly affected by that. And like without any real background of, you know, science in terms of why that is going to be the case, because we know there's no real link between stocking rate and water quality. It's the level of inputs and water quality that has a bearing on it.
Yeah, it's that broad brush approach, as you say. And I think I saw or heard some numbers during the week there that if it happened in the Glanbia catchment, like, I mean, you'd see, you know, for the 150 cow farmer, that coming down to 220 would bring them down to 110 or 112, or there's some data floating around that. And again, which will have a massive effect, obviously, on the viability of a lot of those farms that have invested. Using that water segue into the piece around drought, and what rain hasn't arrived yet, or maybe what's going to happen over the weekend and into next week. Like, dairy farmers are acutely kind of aware, especially in the south and southeast, where the most of the dairy farmers are. Talk to me about, like, there are some farmers, in fairness, that are you know, they've been burnt up now with a couple of weeks, like we'll say, and they've nearly run around the farm. That does, the farm is flattened effectively in terms of what grass is there.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, some of these farms, and like it's very regional, and even within the parish, there's some farmers are actually doing okay and more of them are doing badly. Just those thunderstorms that came 2 or 3 weeks ago, they only affected certain parts of the country, and others within the parishes, they didn't get hit with the rain. But look, I mean, some farmers are very depleted in terms of grass growth and grass supply. average farm covers of, you know, around 200 or 300 kilos a hectare, and a cover per cow of down around 60 and 70. I mean, that's absolutely scary figures. We should be at the moment, we should be at nearly 300 kilograms of grass per cow at the moment. So if we're down around 60 or 70, like, it's unheard of for the time of year. Even in 2018, when we had the drought, we had almost recovered fully by this stage, because that drought really hit hardest in July. And we got a great bounce in growth then, right through September, October, and into November. Like, if we get the rain that's promised this weekend and into early next week, best case scenario, we're going to have good growth. Sorry, an impact on growth rate in 2 weeks' time, I'd say, if even at that. And even then, you're going to see growth rates increasing gradually. They'll probably peak in 2 or 3 weeks after that again, so possibly early October. But I can't see growth rates, Jack, at that stage being any higher than 40 or 50 kilos a day. And the differential then between that growth rate and what the herd demand is, even with fair levels of concentrate in, is only going to be 10 or 15 kilos per day, or, you know, per hectare per day. So you're just not going to build covers fast enough to, like, forget about hitting peak cover. This is now hitting your target closing cover in December, because you're, you know, you're heading into a period where it's going to get colder, it's going to get wetter, and daylight hours are decreasing. I'm very concerned about this drought. Like, it's much worse than 2018. I know it's not technically a drought, it's a dry spell, soil moisture deficits. But it's concerning, and I had it in the paper this week with the costs involved. If you have to feed, if you're one of those badly affected farms now, and you're faced with having to feed for the next 3 or 4 months, it could cost you 30,000-40,000 euros for a 100 cow herd. You know, 300 or 400 euros a cow in between meal and silage costs. And in some farms, then they're running out of silage. They have to preserve what silage they have for the winter months. Yeah. So they're buying in palm kernel and other feeds like that, are buying in hay and straw and silage to feed cows today, which is the same cost there. It's 25, 26 cent a kilo dry matter. Like, you know, they're real costs. And we talk about meat price being high. And we would have said before, should they be eroded by, you know, high energy costs and high fertilizer costs and all the rest? But this is really going to put a dampener on it. And I'm concerned for those farms now in terms of, will, you know, what will profit be at all in 2022?
You think so, Aidan? Like, is it that serious now? And I'll say to you, you know, July and August milk price going to be kind of north of 60 cents a litre kind of net price into the majority of farms. Like, but you, like, is you reckon the price of feed, like, and all that has to go in, will definitely kind of, you know, take the shine off that kind of a milk check?
Well, it will in those badly affected ones. I'm talking about the ones now, Jack, that are they're down, you know, less than 100 kilos of dry matter per cow available. They're really yellow, they're burnt up.
Yeah.
Other farmers then have a very slow growth rate. They're growing 30 kilos a day. The fields are kind of browny, but they're still, you know, they're still green in them. And they're going to bounce a little bit quicker than those other ones that are gone yellow and very scorched. The average farm cover at the moment is 200 kilos across the whole of pasture-based data. So that's 200 kilos of cow, which isn't too bad. It's still a long ways off where we need to be. But that includes farmers up in Adams country in the west that aren't anyway next to near affected by the drought. But it is a real cost, Jack. And I'm concerned for those lads that are badly affected, because they're facing into a situation at the moment where they haven't got enough winter feed as it is for their own use this winter. And yet they haven't any grass at the farm today. And they're going to have to feed hard for the next 4 months in order to get into the winter period.
Yeah.
So, like, it's thousands upon thousands is going to be spent here. You're right in saying milk prices are high, but, like, it's on those farms. And there's parishes of farmers like this now.
Yeah.
There's very little. Like, nationally, there's no talk of it. Only West Cork the other day put in a hose ban. That's going to be short lived because they're going to get 60 or 70 mils over this weekend. But like, you know, 2018, everyone was talking about it and it was hitting the airwaves across national media. But you know, it's as bad now, if not worse. And there's very little talk of it. But the farmers that are in the position are really concerned around it.
And so, Aidan, I chatted to kind of Darren and Adam about kind of relatively drastic things you can do in terms of either reducing demand or drying off early in terms of suckers and that kind of thing. I mean, is there on these farms that are badly affected? Like, I mean, is there any of those guys looking at kind of drastic action in terms of drying off the low yielders, drying off the first and second calvers, even at this early stage or in the next month, like we'll say, in terms of kind of trying to reduce demand?
So the first thing to do is to sell your cull cows. There's absolutely no point in feeding heavily cows that aren't going to be on the farm next year. And look, we said this again last week, you know, there's 20-25% of cows that aren't going to be in the farm now. So if I was a dairy farmer, I'd be selling those, get them out of the system, do an early scan, know what cows are empty, know what cows are late calving, know the ones that are, you know the ones that are cell count and all the rest lameness. So just get rid of them. And that's going to reduce your demand by 20% or thereabouts. The question then around drying off your low yielding cows is it's an economics one. So you're looking at what are they going to milk over the next 3 months. You're looking then at the full cost of feed. So you're going to have to compare those cows against if even after taking off 20% of your herd, like for culling, they're gone. Whatever cows you have left, if let's say 20 or 30% of the diet is going to be meal, you need to look at all the meal costs against those bottom 20% of your cows in terms of milk yield. And if the economics don't match up, you're better off then going to either dry them off and put them on a low plane of nutrition and just feed them grass and out farm or poor quality, you know, silage or hay, whatever you need to just keep them on a, you know, 10 kilogram per day dry matter diet rather than the 18 that they're on currently, which would be more than enough for them because they're going to be dry for the next 5 or 6 months. And work out the cost of that versus the cost of feeding them, versus the cost of the milk that you're going to lose by having them dried off. For most farmers, they're going to continue to milk them on, Jack. That's the reality of it. The economics will probably be thereabouts in terms of, especially if they have no alternative. Like if they're going to be dried off and left in the milking platform, they'll say, listen, you know, 2/3 of the diet, I'm giving it to them anyway. I may as well get milk out of them. And that's fair enough, I think. But if you're very badly affected and you're faced with a situation of having to buy in winter feed as well as buying in feed now, the trying off the low yielders might make sense in that situation, particularly maybe if you're an out farm or something like that, that you can bring them to that you can winter them cheaply for the next couple of months, then that's a runner. But that's a kind of a New Zealand approach. You know, if you're in New Zealand back 10, 15 years ago, that's what they'd be suggesting that you do. We normally don't be faced with that situation because we're not normally in this position whereby a summer drought is this late in the year. It's usually a little bit earlier or a good bit earlier if you get them. But I think drastic times do call for drastic action. And yes, you're going to forego some of that high milk price. But at the other end of the scale, if you're just forking out money for feed, it might be the best thing to do. You know, not spending money could be the best way of making money as opposed to spending money to make money this year.
Yeah. And like, it's fair to say in New Zealand, 10 or 15 euros, the milk price was maybe 15 cents a litre. You know, it was the economics were different, you know, relative to where they are now here in Ireland, as you say, end of August 2022. I mean, Aidan, like, is it fair to say that there's dairy farmers out there that really need to kind of sit down and spend an hour in the morning or 2 hours kind of crunching numbers, looking at their options and really taking a deep dive into kind of where this piece is going for the next kind of the next 2-3 months?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. I think it's time well spent. Even going onto the pasture-based website and doing a budget for grass budget for the next couple of months will tell you exactly how much feed you're going to have to put in, how much silage you're going to put in order to hit your target. And look, the most important target is the one of the 1st of December. Forget about peak, you know, cover at the end of September, or even keeping farm cover now with 500 kilos a hectare. I don't buy into that. The most important target is to make sure that you're not going to start off 2023 in a grass deficit. You know, or not having enough grass, that means you can go out grazing in early and have a good start to the year next year. The back end of this year is going to be hairy for a lot of guys, but don't let that carry over into a bad one next year. So then you need to work backwards. What kind of a farm cover do you need on the 1st of February? What kind of a cover do you need the 1st of December? And do everything you can to achieve that. And like, you know, it is relatively, you know, early dry off or bringing cows in from grass earlier in November will gain you a lot of average farm cover because you're probably going to be growing 10 kilos a day at the end of November. But for me, like, you know, that's the critical target. I wouldn't be too concerned about hitting the peak cover. The idea of a peak cover is that you'll have enough grass to have a soft landing into the back end. But like that's not going to happen this year. So just get over it and focus on what's really important.
Okay, super stuff, Aidan. Lots more on that in the Farmers Journal this week for anyone that's interested. Thanks for that. We'll chat again next week, hopefully when we've had a splash of rain. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Shout out once again to our supporters, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.